For June the 6th, 2014, we talk about the Batman Arkham Knight delay, Dead Island Epidemic, and Among the Sleep. Welcome to the 64th level. My name is Cole Ross.
My name's David Moysmith.
My name's Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. As you heard, Dennis cannot join us today, but he'll be back soon. Yeah. So, Ben, I've got good news for you.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. So with the recent, we're going to the tech news section.
Put your glasses on now.
Activate your Oculus Rifts now. Yeah. So.
Wait. What's that? What's that? The
that was THX. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. No. So, with Amazon Prime's recent partnership with HBO for their instant streaming, I now have access to watch all of The Wire.
Hey!
I tried it out last night.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which season? Season one, probably.
It's the scene that I've seen about I'd say 20 times now so far.
Twenty times.
Yeah, 20 times. It's the opening scene of the first episode. Why'd you let him play? Well, you gotta let him play. It's America.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So I watched that.
Metaphor for the series.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I checked it out just to make sure it watched. I just have 12 more seasons of The Simpsons to get through, and I'm good.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. So wait for that staycation, and then it'll burn right through those. Yeah.
I'm going through those at a startling rate, so it might be a lot sooner than you think.
How long is the Simpsons episode? Is that half hour? Hour?
It's 22 minutes.
Yeah, because okay. Commercials.
Yeah, commercials, you know. So a good 22. Hey, did you just start? Good.
Did I tell you in Simpsons-related news, I saw Hank Azaria live in L.A., 2 weeks ago?
Yes, I think we spoke about it off the air on the last episode.
He's very tall.
Ah,
and
very
funny.
Lanky man. Yeah. Great voices. Hank Azaria, he does what, Mr. Burns, I think?
He does Mo.
is he one of those people who does his character's voices on film, like it's him talking but it's Mo.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You can YouTube videos of him going through the many voices that he does. He does a poo as well.
See, that's what I like about he does a poo. He does Chief Wiggum, Carlson, yeah. Comic book guy. Yeah, yeah. But that's what I appreciate about the lady who does Marge. What's her name?
Tracy something maybe.
I just looked this up. Come on.
Okay.
Come on. And now it's important for me to
Nancy
actually.
Nancy Cartwright.
Yeah.
Nancy
yeah.
Cartwright?
It's yeah.
Cartwright.
No, Julie Kavner. What's great about her is, I mean, you know, you're close. It's one of the three ladies on the show. What's great about her is, like, she actually has in her contract that she can't be compelled to do her voice on camera.
That's the greatest clause ever.
Yeah, but it makes perfect sense because her reasoning is, I don't want to break people's illusion of that.
That's fair.
Yeah, it works. I mean, it's like, you know, you get Seth MacFarlane on in front of a camera and he's immediately doing Stewie or you know Peter Griffin. And it's like, just come, like, it gives you a sense of like dread. Like I start hyperventilating. I need to get out of the room. You know,
see, just him in general kind of gives me that sense. But
yeah. Ugh, now he's in movies.
I'm going to stand up and say I like Seth MacFarlane, not because of, this is going to make me sound old, but like not because of potty humor, but because I feel like he genuinely thinks about what he does.
Yeah.
He
works incredibly hard, and I have to say that I really like American Dad, actually. Mm-hmm. Like that, that's fantastic is what that is.
That show really got much, much better as it went on.
For sure.
It really hit its stride.
Yeah, once they made it less explicitly political, like trying to play on the, you know, like, it's the, you know, the administration guys, it's crazy, right? Like, yes, it's crazy, but also it's not funny to talk about. Like, leave that to, like, Colbert. It's fine.
Right.
You're going to be okay. Just make it about the wacky characters and how just fucked up the CIA is, you know? Bleh. But yeah, no, I agree. I just, you know, it's hard not to hold some of his some of his greater sins against him, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing that always struck me as kind of funny about, like, some of these voices, characters, and Marge is kind of one of them, it always struck me as kind of funny that it's voices that sound, like, very plausible that no one actually has a voice like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know kind of what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Think about Homer's voice. Like, I can't even do it. Like, it's just these weird emphases.
I thought about doing it,
but I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm not gonna do. Like, it's bizarre. I've never heard a good Homer Simpson impression, but that's because you have to make like a crazy face to do it. Like, if you ever watch Dan Castellaneta, again, getting full panic attacks, needing to leave the room. If you watch Dan Castellaneta doing that, like on Inside the Actor's Studio or whatever, like he's contorting his face like he's having some kind of allergic reaction to like Compazine or something. Like, it's he's having facial tremors as he does it, and it sounds great. Like, it's an iconic cartoon voice. But you're absolutely right.
Wait. So yeah. What we're saying is, like, in The Exorcism, where she's like flipping out all being possessed, she would actually sound like
she would do a mean Homer impression.
She would do a mean Patty and Selma. Ah, you suck dicks in hell. Like, see, again, you have to have those sweet, sweet Julie Kavner pipes to do Patty and Selma. Oh man. Yeah. Something I'm noticing, and just while we're on this cartoon like derailment, like Phil Hartman dying did more of a number on that show than, like, I think we realized at the time. Like, losing Lionel Hutz and Troy McClure. Yeah, it's like Phil Hartman dies, and then you just have like Tress McNeil stepping in just to do like generic corporate lady. And it's like, just like as those two lines cross, it's like, oh, that's exactly where the show lost its soul.
Okay. I don't really follow it. What characters are those?
You would recognize it if you heard it. It's the generic corporate lady who often plays like a marketing or television executive.
Okay.
Yeah. You know. Blah. This if you find this entertaining, let me know, because it's kind of out of our wheelhouse. Oh man. But do you guys want to talk about video games?
I guess so.
Maybe.
So. Good. I had this realization this week.
Good.
None of us have a next-gen console. Am I correct in this?
Yes.
You're correct.
Other than PC, which is perpetually next-gen.
I do own a PC which can play Watch Dogs. I'm just waiting for it to go on sale. So okay. I think right now, like that is the metric for which this counts for me. And whenever they announce what the next Souls game is, like, when that comes out, I will probably buy a PlayStation 4. But to answer your question, which you got about halfway through asking, oh, we're totally qualified to, you know, to talk about these things.
All right.
You know.
Just double checking.
Yeah. No, we'll were you going to recommend we call it off? Like, hey, guys, the last episode of Level. Like, unless we... Okay, so we're going to do a Kickstarter. It's going to be a Patreon goal. Buy everybody on the network at PS4.
No, I just thought it was funny. I was talking with my brother because he has a Xbox One or whatever. But yeah, that point came up in conversation, and so I thought it was funny.
I mean,
Dennis were actually kind of talking about that. Kind of, well, not so much the fact that none of us have, but like, what is the point at which, like, if you're going to be like a fairly active gamer, when will that become necessary?
I mean, there's going to be a killer app. Like, I bought... I don't even know what that song was you were singing.
I was saying Batman.
Batman. Yeah.
Under my breath.
Yeah. You know, I bought the 360 at launch, and really I think the time when that became like a necessity to have wasn't until like the next March when when Elder Scrolls came out, or, you know, if you're going to go more kind of mainstream, like the Xbox 360 wasn't really justified until Gears of War came out.
Yeah.
You know, a full year after launch.
Gears of War not an Xbox game?
No.
Oh, wow. Okay, now I feel old.
Yeah, Gears 1 came out in 2006 on the... Yeah.
That's when we were in the dorms.
True dat.
Yeah, that was a great game. Okay.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, Gears of War is fucking great. But
yeah,
I've... Good?
Sorry, I've kind of, for me, my goal is maybe at the end of the summer to... I'm hoping to hold out that long. It's kind of my goal.
Getting that PC kind of pushed my deadline back, honestly. Like,
yeah,
the new Souls game, if that is PS4 exclusive, is going to be the thing that I, you know, that gets me to buy one. I've already said that on this episode. It's implicit in this show, in this network, really. So, but yeah, and I'm sure there's going to be something else before then. But, like, you know, I think
if they made a console specifically just to play that game by itself, you would buy that console.
Like, maybe, I guess. I'm, you know, I've done dumber things. So yeah. I don't know. We're like, water will find its level, right? I think that people are going to keep on listening because we still have stuff to talk about, and we don't always talk about the latest and greatest stuff. If we were, like, you know, the hottest scoops, the biggest you know, stories of the day, then that would be a different story. But I don't think that's why people tune in.
Hey, screw that. The Oculus chicken was breaking news.
It's breaking news that all of us thought was fake until you put the link in the... Oh, man. We think you're going to zig and then you zag. But you know, we're going to find out more at E3 here, coming up in this next week. Segue. By which I mean to say we're going to have kind of a shorter show today, you know, hand-wringing about animation and voice actors aside. Gonna do the brief and then hop right into the grind to talk about the things that we have been playing. So why don't we do a
the brief?
Yeah, where we talk about things that, you know, are happening in this world around us. I have a feeling
but only briefly.
I have a feeling that I'm going to steal your story, Ben.
Probably not, because like I always forget about the big stories and just frantically search for stories before the podcast.
Are you sitting down, Ben?
I am standing up.
You're standing up. Can you find a chair?
I can.
Okay, I mean, I so, do so, have something, a chair next. So, yeah, something to lean against. I have
a tall chair.
Are there any sharp corners that your head might hit when it's
definitely
going?
Not childproof. Yeah, there's a corner nearby. So yeah, can you lean the other direction?
Can you cut like a fun noodle in half and then like just pad any sharp corners before I say what I'm about to say?
Well, I do have that out already, and I cut it in half just for fun earlier. So yeah, all right.
Just to see
what
was inside.
Yeah.
Batman was delayed. Okay.
How far?
This is what we drilled for, 2015.
Okay, I can wait. Yeah, I'm a patient man. Mm-hmm. I'm a patient man.
I guess he's not getting that PlayStation 4.
Well, it's pushing it back, you know, a little bit. You waited a good long while for Grand Theft Auto 5.
That's true.
Yeah, and there are other games you've been waiting even longer than that for. So, you know.
Yeah.
So
still waiting.
Yeah, I know.
Last
Guardian, we all are.
2015.
I don't want to say it. Like,
it's going to happen this year. next year. It's going to happen next year.
Crest is going to be here. You'll see. I really need to stop watching The Simpsons.
Yeah, I was going to say they're shining through now. Yeah.
So if I was a betting man, if I was as much a betting man as you are a patient man, I would say that it's going to come out around the time that Arkham passed. Arkham Antiquity came out this year, probably like March. They're gonna try and fit it in fiscal. They're gonna make it the fiscal year of Batman. that is my guess. Unless they mean fiscal 2015, in which case we're all boned. I guess it's anybody's guess. Yeah.
Whatever. I'm, you know, Rocksteady does good stuff. Okay. They have not missed yet, so
you know,
I will wait.
Miyamoto said it best, a delay lasts a couple of months, a bad game lasts forever. It sounds like a shitty platitude, but it totally is true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it's hard because a lot of times when games get delayed, it's usually not a good sign.
Yeah.
So it's hard to take that advice. But
well, you know.
Yeah. I have a different opinion with this game, though. But,
yeah. It's a thing. I'd rather they do it right than rush it out.
Yeah.
Cool. So that's my story. That's what I thought I was going to be taking from you. So how about one of y'all?
Just a short little story, and it's about Watch Dogs, which I guess you will get sometime, and I will get sometime later. But I don't know if it's good or not. I talked to one person about it, but anyway, it's the highest grossing video game within the first week. It sold more than 4 million copies, and if you multiply that by 60, that's how much money it made. So... Yeah.
That's
cool.
That's crazy, right? How much, I mean, did the article that you read compare that to Grand Theft Auto? Because I thought that was the crazy, you know.
Yeah. Maybe there's a I don't know, maybe there's a qualification on this for it being the newest. No. Oh, I see. The best-selling new IP. That's the qualification.
Oh, yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So it's kind of like the New York Times bestseller list. Anything can call itself the New York Times bestseller because there are 15 New York Times bestseller lists. It's like, oh, we were the best in mysteries and barbershop quartet tutorials.
Wait, is that actually a thing? Is that how, like, there's all these crappy books that say...
That's why everything is called the New York Times bestseller. It's a huge scam. It's like who's who in American high schools. It's, yeah. Did I just blow your mind wide open?
No, it's more like I've gained so much more faith in humanity. Like, that really bothered me that, like, I don't know, these trashy romance novels were apparently what was on the mind of the American people. So yeah. I now feel so much better.
What do you mean? 100 herbal secrets that they don't want you to know about was suspect. Yeah. Blah. Huh.
But also, I guess this game was also the highest grossing game on the first day for Ubisoft. So this was like a PR for them.
Oh, good for them. I don't know.
I was going to say, I also read a Reddit article from one of the developers talking about how much they rushed this game, though. So there's that, too.
Well, that was kind of a similar situation. I was going to invoke Watch Dogs in the delay discussion. Like, it was pushed back from launch on the PS4, and, you know, it was pushed back from launch because really what they said was the reason that they gave was, oh, it just wasn't fun, so we needed to put the fun in, and that's why we needed those extra 6 months.
Yep, that's when you do it, at the end. That's the best time to design that part of the game.
Yep, and with the fun in mind.
Well, hasn't this kind of been, you know, I've seen some reviews that have kind of compared it to the first Assassin's Creed in terms of being like a game that's really, really cool, but not exactly like, yeah, not exactly a good game.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, all that I've ever heard, like, you know, in paying attention to Watch Dogs as like, oh, that is a AAA title that I would like to play. Like, all that I've heard is just general discontent about it. Like, we were promised, but like nothing really specific. Oftentimes from people who never really played it. And so, like,
don't tell them that.
Yeah, they don't know. Like that happens, and I've not heard as many like pointed criticisms at it that kind of were the like was the smoke that arose around Assassin's Creed, which is, hey, this is pretty, hey, it's really technically impressive, but it is repetitive, but the story is shallow, but, you know, et cetera, and on down the line. Like, I get the sense that the play is varied enough in this that it avoids that. However, I think that the Assassin's Creed 1 comparison makes sense you know, to a certain degree, which is like, oh, let's get the tech hammered out now and then figure out like the really interesting stuff. You know, Assassin's Creed 1 was like a technical curiosity. Assassin's Creed 2 is one of the best games of that generation. You know, right. As Ben grumbles,
as I quietly disagree. Yeah, but I mean, I feel like that's an apt comparison. I'm sure there's going to be two or three more of these games as well.
Oh yeah,
or this is now a new franchise. So.
They're grooming it. This is the traveling Wilburys of Ubisoft design principles. Like it is the intersection. It is the collision point between all of their franchises and kind of ethos, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Huh. But I mean, it's good. It's good that a game with an interesting premise sold like that. Yeah. It was marketed out the butt, so I'm wondering how much of that was bought and how much of it was kind of earned. But like, it can't be argued that this is kind of the first next generation game we've seen.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. I didn't even know this till reading this article, but apparently it's out for PS3 and Xbox 360 too.
Yeah, like a really diminished version of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those bridge games, and I'm going to be excited when those stop being a thing. Like, I'm looking, I'm interested. I wanted to see if Murdered Soul Suspect was available on PC. Turns out it's not, but it's one of those ones that is PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4, 360, and Xbox One. And it's like, well, I own two of those systems, but not the systems I would want to play this game on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's odd that they would market it for all four of those consoles, but then not computer.
Yeah. And it's Square Enix, too. Like, they've been getting better about putting stuff out on PC. Like, all of their big stuff is on PC right now. So, makes me angry. David, how about you?
I actually don't have anything.
Okay, attaboy. The grind. All right, guys, time to grind it up. And by which I mean talk about the games we've been playing.
Are we not doing a multiplayer this week?
Dennis didn't put out a question, and I didn't notice he didn't put out a question, so there is no question.
Oh,
yeah.
He is our multiplayer pillar.
Yeah. Which, you know, I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry that that we went 2 weeks without multiplayer. That sucks. It really does. That's on me for not having noticed, but I didn't find out about it until right before we recorded. So it's like, womp womp. Oh, well. We'll be back to the normal show next week. It's going to be a short one. I'm hardly in the mood. So, let's talk about games. Ben, what you been playing?
So I only have one game. It is BioShock 1.
Ooh.
And this is in preparation for our current podcast so we're going to be doing a podcast on BioShock Infinite, and so this was kind of preparing for that.
Yeah, and I can actually we can put some dates for that too. That one's going to be coming out on June the 27th. As per the planning and such. Did you guys get those emails? I don't know. We really shouldn't do this stuff off the air or on the air.
Yeah.
I feel like it's, you know, Gary's doing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, going to be, you know, sounds like, you know, a little bit more in depth. I feel like this should almost simply be called, like, watch out for the level.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Think about it as the Spec Ops episode, except without the interview portion.
True. I'm just saying it seems like we're kind of, by our powers combined.
Yeah. You know, by our powers combined, it's going to be a lot of overtalk because that's too many people to have on a podcast.
Yeah.
So that's going to be June the 27th. Is when we're doing that, and then there's going to be a knock-on episode the next week about the burial at sea stuff. So,
yeah. Okay, so we're doing both the BioShocks proper the first week, and then DLC the second week.
We're doing BioShock Infinite proper, and then the two DLCs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. So this is completely optional then. All yes. Right. Well, yeah, I can actually talk about the game now. All right. Sweet.
Yeah. So you can talk about BioShock 1.
Okay.
Yeah.
Andrew Ryan's more of a dick than I remember.
Yeah.
He Yeah, because like the last scene that you see him in, he's kind of a little bit more sympathetic, I guess. Or yeah, you feel a little bit of
it's pitiful.
Feel a little bit sorry for him. Yeah. But yeah, everything up until that point, I forgot at least of how much of an asshole he kind of was. Mm-hmm. So he
they had to capture the spirit of, you know, objectivism.
And you see, what's funny about that is that I, you know, when I played this in 2007, I wasn't really like that, like socially or like politically aware, really. Yeah, because I was still just kind of a kid. Like that was freshman year of college or whatever. So I didn't have my deep and abiding hatred of objectivism. But by the time I played that, and so like I knew it was kind of like, hey, this is a parody of Ayn Rand or something. But coming back to it later, like looking at how ridiculous they played it off, it's like, oh yeah, this is borderline a comedy about this stuff.
Yeah. See, that was actually. Again, I haven't beaten either game, so I can't say how it ends up. I actually feel like because of that, I think, and part of this is like, I don't particularly like the Bioshock 1. I feel like Bioshock was a much weaker game, particularly in its message, because of that.
Mm-hmm.
In that, I guess I feel like Bioshock doesn't really at all told make a... make a particularly strong statement about objectivism, partially because it's such an strong, like, of that sort of like network of views, that's the ultra 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 most radical one that only crazy people have anyways. So I feel like it's sort of like, yes, of course, you know, it's almost not even worth making a commentary about.
Yeah,
I also feel
where the rubber hits the road on that is it's a criticism of like a lack of medical morals, kind of like how, you know, Frankenstein is a horror novel, but also it's about like what have we wrought in terms of medicine and science.
Right.
And also, you know, it's a criticism of utopian vision, which like the bad guy in that, and you know, there are a bunch of bad guys, but like the big bad, you know, the big bad guy who kind of instigates everything there, is somebody who goes against the crazy, you know, who's fighting against the crazy, you know, objectivist kind of thing. Like, but that only, like, that situation only exists because of the crazy, flawed, you know, utopic ideology that like went into it. You know, the whole like, I'm going to take my ball and go home kind of sense, right?
I'm only going to care about the economics of the society and not about the people in it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it didn't dwell enough. Like, you know, like for me, like the most entertaining thing about that is, who's going to actually, like, I don't know, mop the floors? Like, it didn't address enough of that for me. You know, like in a society of captains of industry, who, you know, who deals with people's shit.
See, yeah, I felt like that's part of it is because I feel like instead of addressing like some of the views that are still out there, but maybe like enough rational to actually be relevant to the discussion in America and the world, I felt like instead they went with something like you said that just doesn't make sense at all.
Hey, seasteading, man, it's a thing.
Yeah. However,
wait, say that again.
Seasteading. It's the notion of like buying up aircraft carriers and trying to build
micronations. Yeah.
Yeah, like libertarian super, like, you know, like super artificial continents off of the coast where they can basically fly in slave code labor and like pay for everything in Bitcoin. And
I'm really debating. Sealand is the one that's the most successful of it.
Okay.
It's they argue they technically have recognition from Germany.
man,
have you heard this story?
No.
The guy the guy, like, who, like, owns the thing, like, went on vacation somewhere else or something. And so some fellow hired mercenaries, took over his, like, oil rig area, and, mm-hmm. like, took his son hostage or something.
Yeah.
Somehow this guy comes back, sneaks in, and, like, counter takes the invader fellow hostage and is holding him hostage. He's, that fellow is apparently a German citizen, so Germany sends one of its ambassadors to be like, hey, can you release our citizen? And ultimately he does, but they argue that that technically counts as diplomatic relations with Germany. But just
trying to... Oh, God.
Just think about the fact that someone cared enough about this to hire mercenaries to take this place over.
Well, I mean that's what's going to happen, like, with these things. So, you know, it's an aircraft carrier. It, like, pulls up outside the San Francisco Bay, but, you know, it's just far enough out that international waters apply. You get a bunch of, like, methed out Somali pirates just roll up saying, "What's up, bitches?" And just, like, climb aboard and just straight Steve Zissou it and take it over. And all these coders, "Help! Help these coders! We're like, we can't defend ourselves. We have all these guns. We don't know how to fire them. Help! They're taking my wife. I have no idea what's happening. Coast Guard, please help. Somebody needs to regulate this."
Although, to be fair, shit. That's not what happened in this situation.
True, true.
In this situation, the guy came back and apparently beat the mercenaries.
True, but it's, you know, there are all kinds of arguments to be made about these things being just drains on whatever nation they decide to set up port outside of, up to and including bringing ambassadors onto them.
Where it comes for me, the reason I know about this is
I was that mercenary.
Surprise, I'm German.
As a fundraising thing, you can you can pay them $50 and be declared a Baron of Sealand.
Oh,
you know, receive a title of nobility. And one of my joking bucket list items has for a long time been, I want to, by the time I die, become a baron. Mm. So I've debated doing it just as a joke.
There is the thing you can do. Like, it's they talked about it on the Idle Thumbs podcast, where you can just buy a lordship.
Sure.
Of, like, these little defunct baronies. Like, it's kind of like becoming, like, you know, like, oh, that star is named after my dick. You know? And, yeah, you can name that barony after your dick, and you become Lord Moneysmith of Dickfordshire.
Hey, I know my bucket list did not specify that it has to actually matter.
Oh, man. Yeah. So, how's BioShock, Ben?
Back to BioShock. So I had some interest. I talked a little bit with one of my friends at work who is a libertarian about this thing. And basically came to the same conclusion that it was not a completely libertarian depiction of society, because I thought that it might be heading that direction, but not really. And it's not completely an Anne Rand version of society. But political shortcomings aside, one thing that I do like about the game that it kind of brings up is the fact that you as a player have no choice about what's happening in the game. No. Even though there's times where there's, like, illusions of choice, it's basically like, we're going to make you do this, this, and this, and you're going to do it. Yeah. So that's just an interesting thing to think about as far as a game. But yeah, having played BioShock last year, I do think the narrative definitely improved with that game. So I look forward to playing that. I think I'm a good 2/3 to 3/4 through BioShock 1 right now, so I'll probably finish that up in the next week or so.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah.
What have you find yourself, like, settled into a plasmid set?
It's mostly the electricity and wrench, man.
Yeah.
It's the one-two combo, as they refer to it. I did not listen to them fully the first time I played, but yeah, that is enough. You can survive with that pretty easily.
The wrench technically can have the highest DPS of any weapon in the game.
You can really beef it out with all the different upgrades that you get along the way.
With your with your tonics and whatnot.
Yeah. So, I have been doing that as well. So, yeah, my wrench is somewhat powerful, but whatever. One thing I do want to comment, though, is how this is kind of going back to this is cross-podcast reference, but going back to talking about Alpha Protocol and the idea of choice in video games and thinking about this game in that context, the choice of the Little Sisters as far as whether to save them or turn them into a dream catcher-like eel – it's really one of the silliest choices in any game that I've seen.
Yeah.
Because it's like, not only it's like, hey, do something terrible or do something good, and you get rewarded more for the good thing than you do the terrible thing in the long term.
Yeah.
Make a choice. And it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. I'll do the obvious answer then. Mm-hmm. So that is kind of disappointing going back to that because there's really no conflict as to what to do. So it is a very vacuous choice.
Yeah, there's like no teeth to that. And I was like, I felt good about my decision to save rather than harvest. Like taking it as, okay, this is a sacrifice I'm going to. God, people have been talking about BioShock for 7 years now, but I'm going to continue. When I initially did that, I felt I am making a sacrifice in order to do a thing that should be right. Right. Like, I'm giving up immediate gain for like some kind of intangible gain somewhere in the future. I thought that intangible gain somewhere in the future, or rather, I thought that future was going to be much further afield than just, oh, somewhere in the same level, you're going to get the same shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like in the very next room, Denabomb's like, oh, oh, wait, that's Atlas. Sorry. That Tenenbaum was going to thank me with a teddy bear full of our necrotics.
Yeah. Huh. Thanks, Tenenbaum. That's So kind of jumping ahead to BioShock Infinite, even though I haven't played this, but I do think it's interesting how they handle choice instead, where it's things that kind of affect the narrative, not in a gamey sort of way, but in more of just a almost like an aesthetic way or something,
in a thematic way, the lack of choice in BioShock the first in BioShock Prime was it was a thematic thing. It was making a statement about the nature of games. Like BioShock Infinite takes it into a more esoteric level that I personally appreciate very much.
The other thing I think with the choices in BioShock Infinite is I would say, in a lot of ways, the choices themselves in BioShock Infinite are still kind of trivial, but I feel like the having to make the choice is the point. So, like for example, I feel like the one everyone knows is, like, at the very beginning where you have your name gets picked, that whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, sure. I can't assume that everyone knows that one.
Yeah.
Let's not refer to any details, but yeah, sure.
All right, I feel like
we know what you're talking about.
Like 99% of people choose the good action, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, the non-Sith option, yeah.
Right, and my understanding is pretty much the same thing happens either way. I don't know.
I think that's like the only one you get a reward for. Like every other choice is like kind of superficial is the wrong word, but yeah.
Well, but what I think was huge about that is what was memorable about that wasn't so much the actual making the choice. It was the point where like I'm trying to blend in and I realize all of a sudden, oh crap, I have to make a choice.
Yeah.
It was the choice itself that was relevant to the story, not actually what you chose. It was the fact that suddenly you can't be a passive bystander.
Yeah. And also, just choices in general kind of reference the overall narrative with that game. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited about playing that.
I do want to know, don't necessarily spoil it, but does like some of the random choices with like what necklace you choose and stuff, does that stuff ever become relevant or make sense?
I mean, the answer to that question is a spoiler. So.
Okay.
It's relevant to the narrative, not to any sort of game mechanics.
Not to anything that happens.
Okay. Yeah.
Cool. So you played anything else, Ben?
That is all I have played this week. Okay. So, but one thing, I don't know if I referenced. Did I ever reference that I played Titanfall? Or did I ever make mention of this fact?
No.
So this happened like almost a month ago when I went to a wedding in Michigan. But one night we played Titanfall as part of not a bachelor party, but like a pre-bachelor party or whatever. Just hanging out, whatever. But yeah, the game's pretty cool. That's like the one game that's tempting me to get a next gen console just because it's the people who played made the initial Modern Warfare and Modern Warfare 2. Mm-hmm. So what was Infinity Ward?
Yeah.
But, no, it's a really fun game. So I just wanted to make mention of that fact.
Yeah.
Did
you get to ride around in a giant robot?
No.
Did you get to take down any giant robots as a tiny little dude?
Got to kill other computers and not other computers. I'm not a computer.
he said way too quickly
and with devoid of emotion. Yeah. No, I did not, but I saw other people do it and yeah, but that's a great idea for a multiplayer game mechanic though. I mean, it's basically the fill in for, the perks, I guess, that you had. I don't know if perks is the right word, but the kill streak rewards. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's a stand-in for that, and you don't have to kill a certain number of people to get it. That only improves how quickly it comes.
Yeah. But,
so it's like kill streak rewards without being awful.
They'll give you the reward no matter what. They're nice to in this game, I guess. So for somebody who hasn't played this game,
it's not very objectivist.
Yeah, that's right. It's the opposite of the Rapture philosophy. Okay, so just to fill any listener in who hasn't heard about this game, the way it works is it's only a multiplayer game, essentially. The single player is playing multiplayers that have like special cutscenes intercut within it. So it's basically just a multiplayer game. And the way it works is you start off as pilots. Everybody's a pilot. There's also, in addition to the players on each team, there are computer players as well, like random AIs and stuff. And so you get points for killing other humans and other computers. The more points you get, the quicker your Titan comes. Your Titan is a giant killing machine, essentially. And so other players pretty much have to run away from the Titan or like attack it strategically. A pilot can jump around a Titan and kind of disable it by ripping out its mechanical innards. And there's kind of defenses against that. Go ahead.
Is it almost, at least from what I heard, is it almost like Shadow of the Colossus style? You can like climb it or something?
Yeah, it's like a very small Colossus. So, like, maybe like one of the cat ones, but a little bit bigger. But it also, I mean, it has like heavy weaponry and stuff. And then for people who like really like the movie Pacific Rim, if there's two Titans, they can like punch one another and stuff like that. Yeah, so it has a pretty cool, it's a very balanced game. The way the movement works, instead of Modern Warfare 2, it's more like Mirror's Edge, where you can kind of you can wall run and you can kind of climb up to places. So it seems a lot more vertically oriented, where you can kind of get around, navigate that way a lot easier or a lot more easily. But it seems very nice. It seems very balanced, and it seems like a lot of fun from the brief amount of time that I played it.
Yeah.
So.
That physicality in the first person play, I sound like a fucking back of the box. But the mirror's edgeness of the movement sounds like a huge deal to me. Actually, that's something that I've wanted in first person shooters for a while and enjoyed in first person games like the Chronicle of Riddick game or even Mirror's Edge itself, which is like make me something other than a camera with a trigger.
And a gun in the foreground.
Well,
it also kind of seems like maybe it helps with not make it be like you're either in a Titan or you're in like a crappy thing. Like it seems like it kind of maybe it's designed to help make pilot mode not just be like that thing you have to deal with until you get a Titan.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're all about balance, you know? So it's, yeah. The one thing I should mention, too, is the Titan self-destructs whenever it's defeated. So if you kill it and you're near it, you kind of die. But the person who's in it is ejected from it. So you get, like, shot up to the top of the map, and you can look down as it blows up, which is pretty cool. But
that is cool.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
So anyway.
That sounds neat.
Yeah. Just thought I'd mention that since I had forgotten to do so. But cool. Yeah.
Hmm. David, how about you?
Sure. I actually got in a beta invite for Dead Island Outbreak, I think it is. Epidemic.
Okay.
Is this another DLC for it? Or?
No, what it is basically it's a what they call like League of Legends MOBA or
yes.
whatever.
Yeah.
Except it's with zombies, so they insist on referring to it as a Zomba.
A Zumba? Is that... No, never mind.
I just feel terrible about everything right now.
But yeah, so it's
Does the MOBA stand for? It's MMO.
It's a massively That's... online battle arena or something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So as I understand it, it's that except like you play as a survivor and then like the other teams are survivors. And there's zombies all over the place, and you're trying to go and get supplies while at the same time, like, fight off the other team that's trying to get the same supplies.
Yeah. The name for this is Dead Island Epidemic.
Okay. So the multiplayer kind of sounds like Last of Us a little bit.
I think more conceptually as opposed to the actual gameplay is... have you played any like the League of Legends or those?
Yeah, like it's over the top. But by which I mean like an overhead view, kind of like a real time strategy kind of thing. Except you're in control of one character who has various things that you can fire off. I totally interrupted you, Ben, when you were about to say if you had played one of those or not.
Oh, that's fine.
Have you?
So it's like World of Warcraft 3 then.
In the sense that all MOBAs are descended from a Warcraft 3 mod called Defense of the Ancients.
I have very little knowledge about this part of video games.
Right. Yeah. It is bizarre also, and is only for teenagers.
It's also, you know, has some similarities to like a Diablo, to like a top-down action game.
Yeah.
Not exactly, but some similarities. But this one, you know, the conceit is, you know, it's zombies instead of like fantasy settings. It's also very over the top.
Can we name the podcast or this episode "Over the Top" and just have a picture from "Over the Top"?
We've already had one about "Over the Top." Yeah.
Can we name it "Over the Topper"?
Yeah, by which I mean back in 2010, we had an episode about Over the Top. So yeah.
Mm. How do you even know that?
Because.
How can you forget?
Yeah, or maybe it was 2011. Yeah, it was when Dennis was in Illinois. He came back and we watched Over the Top in my house on Victor Street. Yeah. Huh.
But yeah, so like to give you an idea, one of the survivors is a lumberjack, and one of his special abilities is to caber toss a log at enemies.
It's to jack lumber.
Yes. One of the characters is a former, or I guess pre-zombie outbreak competitive gamer, and so from that she has like gained the ability to like from playing so many. Street Fighter games to just have amazing kung fu powers.
That's how that works.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's the fan service character.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's very weird. The actual version I played is they also have like a horde mode where it's just, you know, co-op. So that's why I've actually played. I don't know. It's interesting. I have this really weird, like, love-hate relationship with, like, the whole Dead Island series, where, like, I really despise the series because of, like, how... basically, the degree to which the storyline, at least the first game, really does not respect your time at all. And then, but on the other hand, like, the company actually, like, this is, you know, they basically sent a beta invite to everyone who bought the first game on Steam. So that, yeah, that's kind of nice. And, mm-hmm. you know, the fact that, like, their, Dead Island Riptide, the, you know, standalone expansion, they were one of the early companies to kind of do the, hey, we're going to do a standalone expansion and not charge full price for it.
Right.
So it's a thing where it's like, I really despise these people, except that they're actually really seem to try to, like, be a good company and, like, put out quality. It's like, I'm very conflicted.
So the way they treat you is very nice, but the way the game treats you is terribly.
Yeah. I know I've got... Basically, the end of the first game, the storyline, the game itself is often a long slog. The storyline is just not ending, it's not satisfying, and it doesn't make sense unless you play the downloadable content, and at least one of the storyline elements doesn't make sense unless you read the novelization.
Okay.
So, like... They basically kill off every likable character and then give you an ending that doesn't make any sense.
Huh. It's one way to end a game, I suppose.
I mean, you know, it is. Yeah.
Yeah, it's basically they were going for, like, the gritty, like, nihilistic, like, zombie movie ending, mm-hmm. and didn't have the storytelling chops to pull it off, right. is really what happened. But
so,
oh well.
Can I clarify a little bit about what makes this a MOBA? So you're playing as the survivors, you know, kind
yes.
of like the summoners or the
a
champions
survivor,
or whatever.
Yes.
So you are a survivor. Is it 5-on-5? Like are you running it on teams, or is it kind of like a
yes.
1-on-1? Okay.
Yeah.
So it is on teams. Check mark. Are there lanes? Like, you know, do you have to take various, like, are there different lanes that you can go?
See, I'm not sure for two things. One, I've only played the co-op mode, which I think is maybe structured a little differently.
Okay.
The other thing is, I think it's a little bit more, I think maybe it's a little bit more like jungling in a MOBA, in terms of, like, the zombies are just kind of there, you know, being spawned, stuff like that.
But those, just, like, the zombies are like the minions. They're just kind of the ambient things that you kill
right.
for points to charge up your abilities.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think whereas MOBAs are generally like you're trying to push in a lane in to get to the enemy base and kill them, you know, destroy it. I think in this one it's a little bit more of like a one flag capture the flag type thing.
Yeah.
That's at least my understanding. The way the co-op mode works is basically you fight a little ways to an area, and it then becomes like a small scale horde mode, like defend a flag and kill a bunch of dudes. Then you get to the next checkpoint, and ultimately at the end of the level, you fight a boss, which is kind of a more, you know, kind of similar to an MMO boss, you know. There's like one that can, you know, basically screams, and so at certain points you have to get behind like obstacles to block the sound waves, stuff like that.
Hmm.
So it's, you know, it's an okay game. Like, I'm not, you know, it's interesting. I've not seen anything quite like it.
Well, and, it's its own genre. It's a zomba. Get
right.
it? Yeah, it's like the dance, except it's like a mobile. It's like Dota, except it's like Zoda, because zombies guys get it.
That's the thing I really want to know is I will say I'm interested to know if it's canon, because when I said they kill off every likable character, the guy who's the narrator, who's supposedly like back in your safe house, actually is one of the likable characters that somehow escapes being nuked in Dead Island 1. Hmm. So
the zombies have nukes now.
Yes. Suitcase nukes.
A snook, yeah.
What's that from? A snook?
South Park.
South Park.
Oh, okay. So,
So I'm interested to know if all this craziness is officially like canon within the franchise. If so, like, I might have to reevaluate if the franchise is just completely committing to we're going to make this crazy.
Hmm. I'd like to see them go like the House of the Dead. What is that?
Overkill.
Crazy. Yeah, the House of the Dead overkill route would be.
What's that route?
I just make it give it a grindhouse aesthetic. You know, grindhouse. Remember,
I feel like we just make fun of everything now. Like, yeah, there's
okay.
No, it's fine.
In full disclosure, I am in a terrible mood. But do you remember back, in a span of time, I would say between 2008 and 2011, when like making something grindhouse was like the thing to do.
See, like, what everything does that turned actually mean?
That was a movie that didn't make any money. What it effectively meant was, okay, let's add some film grain to this. Let's lower the production values and just put a bunch of cussing in it. is effectively what that was. And it worked for House of the Dead because that was ridiculous anyway. So
I thought House of the Dead Overkill, like all the things I read about, I thought it was supposed to be a parody of some of the like blaxploitation, yeah, and you know some of those things,
which that's what that is. I mean, when, like, okay, making something grindhouse isn't just referring to the Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino double feature from 2007. It is actually going back to a kind of low budget filmmaking for, like, you know, crazy slashers and exploitation stuff from the 70s. But it was that movie Grindhouse which brought that into vogue again, I guess.
Yeah. All I know is that House of the Dead Overkill, at least at one point, had the Guinness Book of World Records for most cursing in a video game.
Yep, and then they broke the Guinness Book of World Records video game edition off into its own book.
Wow. I don't know. Like, the thing that I always wondered about that is most cursing in a video game. And then now we have Typing of the Dead Overkill.
Yeah.
So it's just learning how to like insult people on Counter-Strike in a more efficient way.
Maybe, now that I have home streaming, I can actually play that. I got it in a Humble Bundle a little while back. You guys know how they handle expansion packs on that, right?
No.
Yeah, so expansion packs just theme all of the text you can type. So there's one that's Shakespeare. And I think they have one that's all Queen lyrics, you know, which is a pretty good way to like handle like, oh, let's make this thing different. Yeah.
And Shakespeare. I mean, come on.
Yeah. I kind of want to look up some of the modules that they have. Typing of the Dead Overkill, blah. Nothing feels as long as the time it takes for yourself to type on a podcast.
I was going to say compelling dialogue.
Yeah, sorry. I put a marker there so I can edit it out. But, oh gosh, Typing of the Dead Overkill.
Well, maybe if you played Typing of the Dead Overkill more, you'd be able to type faster.
Oh, sick burn.
A lot of cursing that you type.
Yes, a lot of cursing that you type.
At least silence is a lot worse on like the college radio, though, because that's live. You can't.
True.
You can't edit that out.
Yeah.
Wait,
no.
Was that live?
Yes.
Wow.
Let's see here. So they're $299 a piece. They've got the Silver Screen DLC, which is like classic film quotations.
Like Casablanca stuff.
Like frankly, I don't give a damn and stuff. There's Shakespeare, and then there's Filth. I want to read the description of Filth. The Filth DLC. The Filth of the Dead DLC replaces all of the words and phrases in Typing of the Dead Overkill with terrible innuendo, outrageous insults, and even some slurs in Polish. If you've ever wanted to type phrases like poo protest to repel hordes of flesh-eating mutants, this is the DLC for you. So, I'm pretty down with that kind of juvenile stuff. Ooh! Love at First Bite! Here we go! What is that? It's all, oh yeah.
And rice?
Kind of, yeah. No, it's like a shitty little like romance. You know, it's like basically typing "I choose you." you're typing Valentine's, yeah. And then dancing replaces all of the words and phrases in the game with song lyrics, famous artists, and various musical instruments and terms. Yeah.
So is it still the whole like a zombie comes up and it has a word over its head? You type it to kill it.
Yep.
Okay, because they actually made one of those for the original House of the Dead.
Oh, yeah. Typing of the Dead was a Dreamcast game.
Yeah.
And a PC game.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Did Dreamcast have a keyboard?
I was going to say it had a Kinect and Dreamcast, Wi-Fi.
Dreamcast was like crazy ahead of its time. It had a keyboard and mouse. I have one of those. I have both of those because the Dreamcast was how I played Quake 3. The more you know, I guess, about Cole's history with Sega consoles. Dead Zone lands, Extreme. What else is there anything else, David?
Yeah, I actually picked up WildStar.
Oh yeah.
Unfortunately, I haven't actually been playing it because of the horrible queues.
Oh God! Did they bungle the launch?
I don't know. Like, it's one of those things, like, first off, just, like, in terms of, like, for interest's sake, when they first launched, like, the first couple hours, they actually had a DDoS attack against them.
Okay.
So, apparently, someone thought that it was very important that the world not play WildStar. But other than that, like, they haven't really had... It doesn't sound like that much in the way of, like, I don't think they've had any real crashes. They've had, some bugs, but not too much. The problem is just, I don't know, like, ultimately, more people want it on the servers than could fit.
As would define a queue.
Right, yes. I can't tell if, they made the right decision because they didn't want people to, like, fragment and then not have enough people. And so, like, this is unfortunate but the right decision. Or if this was, like, they screwed up. Like, I can't tell. Mm-hmm. I do know, one of the issues, though, is, like, if you have a guild, you can't very well just go to a different server because you want to play with the people in your guild. So, for example, the server that the Something Awful Guild is on had, pretty commonly, like, 24-hour queues.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, at some points, it got up to, like, 48 hours before you would be through the queue.
Good God.
And so, like, I feel like that's kind of, like... I can understand a queue where it's like, even like, hey, wait like a half hour to play the game. But when it's like, people are like, oh, yeah, I just queue up before I go to work. And then when I come home for the evening, I can play. Ugh, that's kind of like.
Yeah. And what that does is it makes all of the queue even worse because people who are waiting to get in, who are essentially gone or idle or away. Yeah. Yeah, so they're just kind of like sitting there until they're kicked off. So if they were actually playing, there would be more natural churn, except they have socialized people to just leave this thing on all the time.
Right. Yeah. Well, and apparently what people have taken to do is once they get in-game, when they need to leave, just turn on auto-run and back yourself into a corner.
Gosh.
So that's, you know, I'm kind of at a point where, like, I'm really busy right now. So, like, to me, I'm kind of on the sidelines. Like, I find it funny, although I could understand why this could be really frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Game itself, though, you know, I've gone in, I've played some. The queues on my server have pretty much dropped down. So, like, today I was able to play a good chunk. You know, it's a really good game. It's a great game.
Mm-hmm.
The overall tone, I would say, is a lot like Borderlands. You know, they're both space westerns, and they're both sort of, you know, kind of trade on the, like, zany kind of combination of, like, slapstick and dark humor.
Mm-hmm.
And it does a good job. There's just a lot. You know, they really put in a lot of effort to just put in a lot of just crazy details. One of them I learned recently is if you go to delete a character, you know, while you're typing in the confirmation, your character is like sobbing, and then when you delete it, they basically catch on fire and are reduced to like a pile of ashes.
Yeah.
Oh man,
that's intense.
Which,
they make it a moral decision. Yeah.
Yes. Although it's not as bad as in EVE Online when you delete a character, you hear screaming and the sound of grinding.
Please, I have a family. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not quite that bad, but like, you know, there's just a ton of stuff to it where, you know, the entire game is very much built around, you know, these sort of, you know, these very cartoony kind of humor elements.
Yeah.
So.
Hmm.
Yeah. So it's really good. I've created my I'm playing as the gunslinger class.
Okay.
You know, so it's, you know, dual blasters and the ability to like teleport and backflip and stuff like that. I'm playing as the good faction, which unfortunately means I can't be the psychopathic hamster race, but I ended up going with the kind of anime-esque
the level head hamster race.
Yes, the anime-esque like avatar creatures.
Hmm.
So yeah. Apparently, in the future, the only one that actually survives into space are Southerners.
Well, yeah. I mean, StarCraft taught us that.
Yes. And freckles are non-negotiable.
Really a dominant gene. Yeah.
all so, those but, cosmic yeah. rays causing so, yeah. overactive melanin.
But yeah,
just there's, pulling there's... a genetic rope-a-dope.
Yeah, but there's a lot of fun stuff. The race I'm playing as is, you know, sort of the cat people, and
cat people run.
They're sort of played up as initially as being kind of, you know, the tree hugger race, you know, that sort of thing. Until you eventually find out that all the plants they brought with them are sentient, so they're actually slaughtering these creatures in order to eat. So they, you know, there's a lot of stuff like that where they'll kind of do, you know, do sort of somewhere in between like Looney Tunes and a little bit of a Borderlands-esque, you know, dark humor.
Yeah.
So good stuff.
Yeah. If only we could play it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
That is so bad. Like, because it's so bad for a game like that, especially around its launch. And no MMO ever has had a good launch. But just like if you're planning to like play that and you're trying to hook up with your homies to like roll deep in some Wildstar and it's not happening, like that just takes away, like that's appointment play, and if you can't make that appointment, it has to be really frustrating.
Right. And I know I have very mixed feelings about. Like, I completely understand why it happens. On the other hand, I kind of feel like cloud computing is a thing. Mm-hmm. There are entire companies that build their business around, hey, if too many people want your stuff, you can just spin up another server.
Yeah.
Like,
you only pay for what you use. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, I realize that that isn't the standard now, so it's not like it's exactly negligent. On the other hand, there are options for this, and I feel like two big things that are outdated within MMOs but are still around. One is, you know, everyone, there can only be one of any given name, and the second thing is having server, you know, separate servers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, and it makes a little bit of sense. Like, oh, this is the one that is geographically closest to me, but you know, distributing that. And I don't know enough about this technology, despite the fact that I write about it every single day, to know that saying this next thing isn't stupid. So the stupid thing I'm going to say is, like, it kind of seems smart to me to, like, maybe start with way too much and then scale back. Because that first week is so crucial. Like, you want to make a good impression. You're going to have as many people as you're going to have on this game right there. So, like, start with a massive surge, you know, and then scale it back, and then scale it up as it grows naturally. Because you're going to get those spikes, and you want to be able to accommodate them.
I think part of it, though, also is you have to be willing to, when you scale back, let one to actually do it, but also to let the players make what you think is the wrong decision. Because basically what it's going to end up is you know, most players, not all, but most players are going to want to play on the most populated server.
Yeah.
So you ultimately, if you're going to do this and actually have people opt into your program, you need to then, once it gets down to, you know, contracting, allow them to transfer to the super ultra popular server.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's the problem, is a lot of game companies aren't willing to let people make what they think is the wrong decision.
Charge them for it.
Yeah, well, but then they're just going to create on the most populated server to begin with.
Huh. So that's WildStar. I'll do mine. So I'll get the little ones out of the way. By which I mean get these kids out of here. Shoo! Shoo, kids! Sorry. Last Wednesday we played some JS Joust at my office.
Nice.
Johann Sebastian Joust. It is a game in the Sports Friends collection of games. We play. Oh boy, this is the thing we weren't supposed to talk about, because it was me, Dennis, and David, and you weren't able to join.
Oh
yeah. So I'm bringing it up. I'll give a brief brief recap of it. This is the titular slow motion high impact Tai Chi that one of the most recent episodes was about. So the idea is up to seven people hold a motion controller that kind of senses the motion. If you move it too quickly, it vibrates or it lights up and you're out. The sensitivity of it changes depending on how quickly the music goes. So when the music is playing slow, you can't move very fast at all, but you can still move. When the music is playing fast, it's a fast game. And the goal is to try and get other people to move their controller. And so that can take a number of forms, the most common of which is I'm going to invade your personal space and try and bump your controller without you bumping mine.
Mm-hmm.
So you need like a big space for it. It's technically played without a screen. There is a display element. We did it in my, you know, big but still relatively constrained living room with three people, and with this one we had four going at a time in kind of the big offices at Epifio, and it was a good time, except one of the people I was playing with got his hand injured by the other person's robot hand.
Wait, what?
Wait, you work with a robot?
We have a designer.
A cyborg?
Yes. We have a designer. He is one of our best illustrators. I've talked about him before. He's one of our best illustrators who just so happens that he does not have his right hand. And in its place is a robotic prosthetic that, you know, moves. Like, it responds to his impulses or whatever. I'm not quite sure how.
That's kind of
his
awesome.
Impulses to kill.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, it's the robot hand's impulses. He can't be held accountable for that. But he was holding the controller in his robot hand, and one of the other people tried to knock it out, and it injured his own thumb. So, kind of funny, you know. I feel like
that would totally be worth it to you. Oh, what happened to your hand? Yeah, some guy attacked me with his robotic arm.
Yeah. Huh.
Passively attacked me. Yes.
Yep. Oh, man. Flew too close to the sun. And by the sun, I mean this robot hand. Yeah. So that was fun. That's a little bit closer to the intended environment, I think. We didn't get up to the full 7 because we didn't have enough controllers around. But yeah, it is a neat concept that you know, it is cool to have an opportunity to play.
Is the 7, is that split screen, or how's that work?
It doesn't use the screen for that, like just the display for like the scorekeeper kind of thing with the instruments playing. It just has up to 7 instrumentalists that play. You know,
but I'm just saying, like, can you plug 7 controllers into one console?
On the PlayStation 3, it can accept up to 7 Bluetooth devices.
Oh, Bluetooth. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Bluetooth. Yeah. So, that's one of them. Playing more Rocksmith, but that's not really worth talking about, except to say I ordered a new guitar.
Out of necessity or preference?
Kind of. It's nothing special. Like, Monoprice has guitars that are modeled after Les Pauls, and they just had one that went on sale today for extremely cheap. You know, they're not going to be the best guitars, but it's going to be better than my now approaching 10-year-old piece of shit, like, Filipino Squire. Or something, like, where all the wiring is shot, and it picks up like radio signals and shit. So it picks
up radiation from the Big Bang. Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Wait. So this is like, we had Twitch plays Pokemon. This is CIA plays Rocksmith.
Pretty much, yeah. Like, I'm picking up signal from passing jets. It's like the end of Spinal Tap. But just say, yeah, like my Squire is on its last legs. I would like to have this thing that looks like a Les Paul. I can't justify buying an actual Les Paul, but I can justify using this as a stopgap and then just selling it whenever I get like an actual one. So that should be here relatively quickly. Go ahead.
To be fair, if you're gonna go for it, you should go all the way and get the more Paul.
That's terrible. Boo! Sorry. Usually, I'm the one being booed. So
I know. I want to applaud your booing.
Yeah.
Yay!
Yeah. So I'm excited about that. That should be coming this weekend. We'll see how it goes. Plus, it has 22 frets, whereas this stupid Stratocaster only has 19, and I can't hit those sweet, sweet high notes.
Was your current one, is it actually called a Filipino Squire?
No, it is. Okay. So Squire is the sublabel of Fender. That's like their branch of learner guitars. So yeah, like it's guitars for kids and stuff. Good.
Yeah. I think maybe do they make mandolins? I think maybe my mandolin
possibly.
Yeah.
Your mandolin is probably, I know that, you know, Gibson is more into the weird little guitars market.
Yeah, yeah. What's Gibson's like kind of
Epiphone? Epiphone.
Yes, that's what it is. That's what I'm thinking.
No, but
so
kind of
the Fender equivalent.
Yeah, yeah. So it's the Squire. It's made to look like a Stratocaster, but it is, yeah, for all intents and purposes, a Stratocaster, except it is of very poor workmanship. So it doesn't hold a tune. I bought it from somebody like in high school who just didn't want theirs anymore. It has a Floyd Rose bridge that's really, you know, just janky, so it goes out of tune a lot. Like, even though this is a $99 guitar, I mean, it's regularly like what 200 or something, but it, you know, it is a similar like pedigree. Like it's a better starting point than what I had before. Like I can actually put different pickups in this and stuff. So I don't know. I'm just trying to justify having spent that money, but at least it's not very much money. So, some more Rocksmith, no interesting DLC on that. The big one though is a Kickstarter game that came out here over the past week that I played all of last night, called Among the Sleep.
Oh yeah. I saw you playing that. I watched, some of the trailers for it. That looks so cool.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Go ahead, Ben. Yeah.
Yeah. What is it?
So to give the premise, it's a horror game. It is like a first person walking around and navigation kind of thing. Similar to a like an Amnesia of sorts, especially in certain spots. Except the gimmick, the thing that makes this, you know, noteworthy, or the thing that kind of draws people's attention, is you are a 2-year-old.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the idea is it's your birthday. You get a gift from one of your parents. It is a teddy bear, and you're put to sleep, but you wake up and something is wrong in the house. Like, you know, your crib tips over, you find your teddy bear. Your teddy bear talks, and he's incredibly creepy. Like, I kept expecting him to be like a sinister, you're like, oh, it's him all along kind of thing. But he's, you know, your kind of sidekick. Like, you keep him, you know, on your back the whole time, except when it gets dark, because this is a first person, you know, kind of game. You actually hold it and squeeze it. So you press the X button to squeeze it to actually light up the room. He's like, hey, you know, if it gets dark and you get scared, hold me tight and you'll feel safer. And the way that manifests in the gameplay is, you know, light is shed. I don't think he's like a glow bear, but it is, you know, yeah, it is the way that mechanic manifests. And so like where this gets really successful, is it kind of portrays the world a little bit how a 2-year-old would experience it and see it. And it gets progressively more messed up, and like the metaphor doesn't hold as well when you're like crawling through a blood swamp or something among, you know, just like a bunch of dilapidated playground equipment. But like when anytime you see writing, it's like in squiggles that look like a cross between Japanese and Korean.
Okay.
Yeah, so like you're walking around in these boxes and stuff, and like things that like places you would have gotten into. So like closets are a really big factor in this. So like, you know, you go into and out of closets, and it has like these nice little House of Leaves kind of moments as the geometry and architecture gets much more implausible. Like it just starts getting much more unsettling because you are from this lower point of view. It's not challenging really. Like the only really like big time where I ended up having trouble with it was when it was kind of glitching out. Like, oh, I just like straight can't pick this up. But puzzle wise, it's never too hard to figure out, because most of it relates to the problems with your physical size. So like you can't open doors by yourself. You have to find a chair or something else to like push up against it, and then you kind of like crawl up on top of it to, you know, to open it. So you are, you know, instead of getting, you know, just picking up something that's on top of a counter, you're pulling out drawers to make little staircases to get up to the, you know, to get up to the top to get where you need to. If something's on a high ledge, you can actually pick up things on the ground and throw them. And again, in like a physics based kind of thing. I'm not down with physics based puzzles in general. Like it just feels a little bit too random, a little bit too entropic. Like there's just lots of ways for that to bug out. And I understand that that's a little bit easier to design around, you know, just kind of like, we just have to take this physics middleware and put it in, and then just kind of give you enough signposting to know this is roughly what you're supposed to do. I'd rather it be more tightly scripted. What's happening, just because those kind of puzzles don't tend to land for me, but it's never so bad that it, like, straight gets in the way.
Sure.
For too long anyway.
Does it seem like it's trying to go for, like, you know, does it go to like a straight up like House of Leaves, like Can You Die? Is it kind of trying to be more just like, here's how a little kid imagines the night, and, you know, this is kind of by definition unreliable narrator? Kind of, where does it seem to be going with this story?
You can die. There is danger. It doesn't. It's not introduced until relatively late in the game, but it is genuinely scary. What happens up until that point? It's kind of doing the usual survival horror trick of playing off of your dread. Like the thing that keeps me from going forward isn't anything the game is putting in front of me. It is what I'm imagining is in the next room, and so the unreliable narratorness of it. It's like, only to a little kid and only to the way that they're presenting this world would like a raincoat hanging in a weird place look like a figure, you know, like a sinister figure. But they totally play off of that in a lot of ways. So it's inventive how they do it. You know, it's more unsettling and just kind of like, it's more unsettling in kind of the past tense a little bit. Like in the moment, it's just kind of like, oh, that's kind of weird. But like as it sinks in and as you think about it more, you know, because I beat it kind of all in one go. It's a relatively short game, probably over the course of like 2.5 hours or so. You know, that it's unsettling, but like some of the themes it presents are bigger than just, oh, this is a kid who's having a nightmare. To say what those are, like to explain, like, oh, here's why this thing is coming after you, would give away a little bit of the payoff on that in a way that I don't feel comfortable doing right now. But suffice to say, it is a thinker insofar as like it's more than just a little kid having a nightmare, and it speaks to kind of, I think, a memory that we all have of, you know, the way we interpret things that we wish were not true, even if we don't understand why they are the way that they are. Anything from, you know, why does the world seem to go away when there is no light, down to trying to get used to a new location, up to like, what the hell is happening with my family right now?
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's good. It seems, if it came down, like if you were to play like a walkie environmental based horror game, not so much horror game, like a walkie environmental storytelling, you know, adventure-esque game, I would say like go with Gone Home first, because they are similarly priced. This is an effective horror game. I like it a lot. However, I recognize that horror won't land for everybody. So it's kind of hard for me to like just come out and say like, hey, straight up do this. Even if it does some really interesting things with, you know, the way it presents, you know, the world from this kind of strange and unique perspective. So I guess I would say like, go for it and buy it, because I want more of this kind of thing to exist. And, you know, this was crowdfunded, like it was Kickstarter. That's how I got the game. They've already kind of like seen a return on their investment. However, I think that the more people can recognize this kind of thing when it happens, the more it's going to happen. So in kind of the, what is it? The categorical imperative. I want more people to play this game because I want more stuff like it. I would rather you guys did it. So I'm going to say, yes, check it out. If you get the opportunity, it will probably be in some kind of bundle here very soon. So,
would you say, do you think it's good enough that like the team or whatever will be able to launch pad this into, you know, a lot of times an indie team will make one really good game, and then that'll kind of be the point where they can start more easily getting funding and, you know, making the games they want.
Yeah, I could see that happening. I could see them. I mean, if you look at like the Dear Esther team, like the Chinese Room guys, exactly. You know, they got folded in, and now they're kind of like a boutique art house that is kind of drawn in for other, you know, for other similarly high concept projects, you know, like Amnesia. Yeah. Yep. The studio for Among the Sleep is Krill Bytes, and apparently they have another game called The Plan, which I have not played. Have you? Is that the one that you played, Ben? The real short one? The Plan about the bug?
About the bug?
I think
yeah,
maybe,
Dennis played it.
I
because
think Jala, Jala referred that and Dennis played it.
Yeah, yeah. Jala recommended that, and then I proceeded to not play it. But it is from the same it is from the same studio who did this thing.
Hmm.
Yeah. So that is Among the Sleep. It's pretty cool. I'm happy I backed it. Probably not for everybody, but, you know, that's the kind of thing we talk about sometimes. You guys have any more questions about that? I didn't mean to like wrap up and be definitive about it before you had a chance to weigh in.
Just remember, don't think about yourself. Think about what Cole can play.
I suppose. I mean, anybody can play it.
That's true.
Yeah. I'm just thinking we're getting very, very hipster in this. You know, it's a good game, but you know, it might not be it.
Well, yeah. I mean, not everything is for everybody. I think we can all. Is it hipsterish to like put a caveat in saying like I recognize that this isn't an entirely mechanically sound experience?
No.
Okay.
It would be hipster to say this is better than anything you've played, and you probably wouldn't recognize how good it is.
This would be wasted on you, swine. Yeah, I don't know. I'll be interested because you know this is one of the first times in a little while that I've played a game before it really got talked about on other shows, so I'm kind of curious to hear what other people are going to think about it, because the reviews are generally what you would expect this to be. Like it got like a seven and a half on Polygon, you know, like that mm-hmm. that is about what it's landing at.
See, mm-hmm. I feel like there's this thing where like an indie game or some of these, you know. Yeah, like the Gone Home, stuff like that. It's like it gets time to review them, and all of a sudden, all the reviewers actually review games the way they should, by which I mean in a balanced way, instead of just being like 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
Not a 4-point scale, yeah.
Right, because I know, like, maybe that's just me, because, like, most of these games, like, truly it is, you know, they're good games, but they have often some, you know, failings in gameplay. So, like, 7 out of 10 is really you know, probably what they should be.
Yeah, 7 out of 10 is, like, that is a good score.
That would be the equivalent of, like, an 8.5 out of 10 for a AAA game.
Yeah.
Right, and, like, for a AAA game, if it got 7 out of 10, that means steer away.
Yeah, it means this will actively destroy other better games in your collection if you buy it.
Right.
Like... Ugh. Game reviews are broken. News at 11, which it is currently a little bit after 11, so we're a little bit late on that one. Anyway,
fuck.
you guys want to button it up? I'll stay here all night.
Ben.
Let's zip it up. Let's Velcro it up, yeah.
So thank you so much for listening to level number 64. We really appreciate it. There's some stuff you can do. We are on Facebook. It's been a little bit since we got an iTunes review. I know we say it every week, but you know, it does help keep us up in the ratings and such. So if you are a person of the iTunes persuasion, then go for it. We will not... yell at you for doing that, I guess. Let's see here. What else is there to do? Did you guys know that we're on SoundCloud? Like, if you want to share sounds that way, it is a way to do it. Like, every episode of the levels on our SoundCloud playlist. That is soundcloud.com/ DuckFeedTV, which is, yeah, a place you can go to listen to things.
We're on the cloud.
Yeah, we're in the cloud right now. And in general, we have that Patreon account, too. That is to support the entire network. That is patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Even as little as $1 a month makes a big difference. Viewers like you, tote bag, and whatnot. The big kind of perk for that is getting the episodes a day early, which people really seem to like to do. And we may do like polls and stuff to you know, see what our next bonus level is about and whatnot. So. That is a hip and happen place to be. I'm running out of steam quick, guys. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
Have a great day.
Yeah, please do. So, I have been Cole Ross, at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dave Mysmith, at Mysmith777 on Twitter.
I've been Ben Merkel, at Merkelizer on Twitter.
Yeah, and always remember, end with the fun in mind.
don't think about it from the beginning.
No, that's that way dragons lie.
Game mechanics are best saved for the crunch time.
Afterthoughts. Yeah.